Welcome to the Decaf Show.
Hello, welcome back to the Decaf Show. Today we have our fifth guest to our Friday Talks, Chinmaya Iyer. Chinmaya Iyer is a Hindustani classical vocalist based in Delhi. He had an ear for music from a young age and began as a Western vocalist and also learned the keys at age 8. Eventually, his natural inclinations made him gravitate towards Hindustani classical music, which he is currently studying. He has been the president of KMC-MUSOC, one of the premier music societies of Delhi University Music Circuit. He is also a graduate in commerce. Currently, he is further pursuing musical studies at the Faculty of Music and Fine Arts at the University of Delhi. He aspires to become a music research scholar and subsequently teach music at university level.
Right, so I am a Hindustani classical vocalist based in somewhere around New Delhi. I stay in a place called Greater Noida, which is borderline Delhi, but it's not very, very well known. That besides the point, I've been into classical music for around, I think, 10 years now. And before that, I actually began my musical journey as a Western vocalist. I used to stay in Dubai, and of course, in Dubai, there wasn't that much of an Indian classical music culture. So, I mean, even actually, people used to listen to more Western influences, and there was more Western pop culture prevalent there. So, as a result of that, even in school, they used to teach Western music. So, we used to have Western music choirs, we used to have piano classes, and I began from there. I think I was around 7 or 8 years old at that point of time. I learned piano for around 2 years. I was about to give my Trinity exam also, but then for whatever reason, I had to come back to India. And then what happened was at one point, I started listening to a bit of classical music seriously. So let me give you a little context. I am a Tamilian who has basically lived everywhere except Tamil Nadu his entire life. So I've lived in Bangalore, I've lived in Mumbai, and I've basically been jumping all across. And so the one constant which was there in my house was that my mother used to, you know, play both North and South Indian classical music. So when I talk about South Indian classical music, not exactly South Indian classical music, but it was more towards Bhakti Sangeet. So MS Subbalakshmi was a constant feature. So we'd have your Bhaja Govindam playing in the morning, or maybe a Hanuman Chalisa, and these sorts of things of MS Subbalakshmi. And my mother was also into a lot of Hindustani music. So she would play artists like Ustad Rashid Khan or Pandit Bhimsen Joshi. So not very actively, but I would passively listen to a lot of these musical influences. And I was very young. It really didn't make sense to me back then. But fast forward to somewhere around 2012, and there was this recording which I happened to stumble upon, and it was a very interesting, anecdote, because I was sitting in the other room with my keyboard, and I was, I'm sure you must have heard this song by Linkin Park. It's called Breaking the Habit. It has like this full blown anime video. And Linkin Park was like very, very hip in the early, late 2000s. Then they had like this sort of a lull period. And after they came back with that song, Lost in the Echo, right? So this was before they came back. Trying to emulate one of their songs, I was trying to compose something which had a similar feel to that. But my mother was playing this recording in the other room. And it sounded very interesting. And for some reason, like, I left my keyboard, whatever I was doing, and I went and began listening to what was playing in the other room. It was a recording by Bharat Ratna Pandit Bhimsen Joshi. He was singing a monsoon rag called Rag Mia Malhar. And I don't know what happened that day. What I heard, it was so otherworldly. It was so amazing that immediately I decided, to hell with everything else. This is what I want to do. I want to learn this music. If I want to sing, I want to sound like that. And I want to understand this music better. And that's basically how I started on this long and, I won't say tiring, but a very long and very difficult journey of Hindustani classical music.
That's really so, yeah. Great, bro. It started from Western and somehow ended up in Hindustani. And
yeah.
So starting with a very common question, Like, what's the difference between Hindustani music and Carnatic music?
Okay, it's a good question. So when you look at Carnatic music, it has a different format from Hindustani music. What we need to understand is why this is so. I'm sure you must realize that the southern part of India, even after the Mughal invasions, it was comparatively less affected. It was the northern parts of India whose entire culture, their entire landscape, the mannerisms of the people, the cultural context of the people changed after the Mughal invasions. Of course, I mean, there were Mughal invaders who went to places like your Mysore. Mysore was a place where they'd reached. But by and large, the southern part of India was not affected that much by the Mughal invasions. So as a result, what happened was that in the northern part of India, after inclusion of Mughal and your Mongolian influences, the sound of the music which emerged was very different. So what remained in the southern part of India that continued to propagate as Carnatic music, thus having a different feel, and what happened in the north of India, that was Hindustani classical music. So this is like the basic difference in terms of history. But if we look at the musicality, what is different, I would say that both of them are very different yet very similar, because they operate on very similar concepts. So I'm sure you would have heard of this instrument called the tanpura. Like in South, we call it the shoebox, tambura, like the Lord of the Rings.
Tambura.
Yeah. So the tanpura is the common element. It is like this binding factor of all of the music in the Indian subcontinent. What makes the tanpura special is it's a drone instrument which plays throughout the entire performance. It is something which is always constant in our music. And music begins and ends from the tanpura. So you can see this, that both Hindustani music and Carnatic music have the tanpura. The second thing which you can see in both forms of music is that we sing something called rags, right? Raga music, something which is very, very unique to the Indian subcontinent. And it's not very easy to kind of define what a raga is, right? But if I were to loosely tell you what a rag is, it is basically a combination of a certain set of notes, a certain emotion, a certain use of set musical phrases, as well as the emotion which that invokes. So it's a very, very, it's a wide spectrum. It's not something which can be defined so easily. So if someone asks me what a rag is, I normally just say I don't know how to explain. A rag is simply a rag. But yeah, if I were to look at it in a more technical way, a rag basically it's a scale which has certain rules, regulations, it has grammar, and there is a particular way of presenting it. Besides that, there is this the system of rhythm. So what differentiates Indian music from Western music is the idea of rhythm. If you look at Western rhythms, it's more linear in nature, like 4 by 4 or 6 by 8, right? The time signatures, they are linear.
Like, 4 by 4, 8 by 8, this way.
But if you look at Indian music, it is cyclical in nature. Now, what is the significance of music, of rhythm being cyclical in nature? If you look at everything around us in nature, it always occurs in a cycle. Day and night is a cycle. After 12 hours of day, right, you get another 12 hours of night. I mean, obviously, that's not the way it's divided, but 24 hours in a day. After 24 hours, you have a new day, right? 365 days in a year. After 365 days, it's a new year. It starts on the day after the 365th, after the 365th day, right? It occurs in a cycle. Similarly, in Indian classical music, the rhythm occurs in a cycle. For example, the most basic taal in Hindustani music, it's called teen taal, right? So it's a 16-beat cycle. We don't say 16 beats. We say it's a 16-beat cycle, After the 16 beats, we come back to the first beat and it goes on loop. So it's like dha din din dha dha din din dha dha din din dha tit din din dha dha.
All right.
Right.
This theme
time. So, it's basically a 4x4 cycle structured into four parts, but in a cyclical format.
All right. We did have a question. Like, how many types of taal are there in music?
There are lots. I mean, there is something called prachalit, which means which is in trend, which is in vogue. And then there is something called aprachalit, which is not so popular, which is not so much, which is not used that much in popular music. So if we look at prachalit taals, there are quite a few. There's ek taal, teen taal, rupak taal, dadra, kehrwa, deep chandi, jhumra, tilwada. I mean, these are very funny sounding names, I understand. But yeah, these are the taals which are typically used. And there are even more aprachalit taals which aren't that popularly used. There are taals called Parodast, Gaj Jampa, Pancham Savari. So they have a little funny names. But essentially, most of Indian classical music is sung or played within teen taal, ek taal, jhap taal, rupak. And if you look at light music, non-classical music, it's played in Kehrwa, Deep Chandi, and Dadra.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
These are the most commonly used taals.
Yes, most commonly used.
And if you had to choose one of your favorite out of these, would you be able to?
In classical music, right, there's something called the Gharana system. And every gharana has a different choice of rags, a different choice of taals. Although I won't say I have any particular favorite, but what happens is that certain taals tend to get overused. Generally, certain taals tend to get overused. And also, we have our own biases because of the style which we follow, the gharana which we follow. So I would say that my favorite... So there is this concept called vilambit in Hindustani classical music, where we sing... a rag in an expanded format for around 45 to 50 minutes. It's a single rag. It's a single presentation for 45 to 50 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So in that Vilambit format in our gharana, we use this taal called Jhumra. So I would say like I have a particular liking for Jhumra when it comes to the extremely slow taals. But when it comes to the faster tempos, I think I like pretty much all of them. Like I love Teen Taal, I love Ek Taal, I love Rupak. There's even a taal called Jhaptal, which is a 10-beat cycle. I'm very, very fond of that. I can't really pick a particular favorite.
So I heard that, you know, there's a particular raga for sleeping. Is that true?
I think this question needs to be a little reframed. There isn't a particular raga for sleeping. But people do believe that Indian classical music has certain therapeutic effects.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know how many of these have been proven or disproven. I haven't gone into this too much because I personally, even though I've been in classical music, I haven't felt that, you know, listening to a certain raga has given me, you know, great sleep or, you know, if I'm anxious, it cures my anxiety. I haven't experienced it. I'm not saying that this might not be true. But yeah, people say that there's this raga called Bhairavi. Bhairavi is very good for curing insomnia, apparently. I don't know how true this is. But yeah, I mean, people do believe that Indian classical music does have some therapeutic effects.
All right. So,
that's
when...
That's nice. Okay. Chinmaya, so is it hard to master all this? Like, how did you do it? You know, practicing taals and rags and everything.
Right. So, firstly, I mean, I don't think I've mastered anything. Far from it. It's an ongoing journey. It's a long process. But what I will tell you is that, yes, it's very difficult. It's basically a lifelong journey. And what I've seen in whatever little time I've been learning classical music is that you can't really tell when you will achieve a certain level of perfection or a certain level of mastery over anything. It's something which it happens in its own due course of time. But if you were to ask me, like, in a nutshell, how long would it take for someone to begin to sing at least the basics or at least a fair amount of classical music properly, I'd say it takes around 5 to 6 years of dedicated practice to start understanding a vast amount of it. But perfection takes a lot longer. And
really a long journey. And
yeah,
okay, I really have a very good question, and it is, do we need a good voice to be a good singer?
Unless you have any particular voice issues, right? Like, say, for example, like it's a clinical or a functional voice issue, and you're not able to sustain pitch or maintain pitch. Unless that is the case, I think anyone can become a singer. Anyone can sing.
Okay, that's good.
I mean,
okay.
Not become a singer, not a professional singer, but everyone can learn.
Apart from singing, is there something which you do?
I mean, I would say I have a very, very, if I were to say it in Hindi, a very chanchal mind. So, like, I jump from one thing to another very soon. So, what I do like doing besides my music is I like reading. I like researching on fitness and health. This was a very old passion of mine. I was into martial arts big time. And I was also into fitness and health. But yeah, I mean, it's not something which is that interesting. But yeah, I mean, these were two passions of mine. I used to love martial arts. I used to love, I still do love them. But, you know, in economics, we have this concept of opportunity cost. In order to give time or to give resources to one thing, you have to remove resources from another. So most of my time resources invested in my music. So naturally, other things sort of take a backseat. But yeah, I mean, I love cooking too. That's another thing. That's something which I genuinely invest a lot of my time. I do a lot of cooking.
Yes, I do follow you on Insta, and I've been following your ingredients and recipes. Mostly vegan, I guess.
I am not vegan right now. But I have a vegan brother. So, you know, when I'm cooking for everyone in the house, I try to, you know, make it in a way that he can also enjoy it. But I'm not vegan per se. In fact, I'm quite the opposite.
So what's your daily routine like, considering the fitness? And I mean, when I watched your stories, you go for walking and then you find some dogs there.
Yeah. So that's also because, like, the area which I live in, right, it's actually a green belt. So, you know, I get to see deer and dogs and peacocks and pigs also occasionally around. Sometimes you get to see Nilgai. So when I go for a walk, you know, I have these sorts of wildlife encounters. But yeah, talking about my routine. So as a classical musician, a routine which I followed for many years, it's sort of changed a little now in the last 1.5, 2 years. Also because, you know, after the pandemic happened, I don't have to go out that often. So I can take my own time. But while things were normal, my routine used to be waking up at 4 a.m., practicing till 6, and then, you know, going out, doing whatever I had to do for the day, whether it was college or going out and teaching or doing whatever. Basically, it used to be 2 hours of practice in the morning, 2 hours of practice in the evening. And if I was going out to college and I was part of a music society, so we'd have 4 to 5 hours of practice there also. So it used to basically be around 8 to 9 hours of practice a day, classical music. I mean, not just classical, by the way, the music society where I was a part of, it was the same group of people who used to sing both an Indian classical choir as well as a Western a cappella choir. So there was a fair amount of variety there. fair amount of learning. Baki, my routine, if you talk about things besides music, I try to work out in the evenings. I try to give like not every day, but four days a week. I try to work out. I try lifting some weights. I try doing a bit of running every now and then. Just staying healthy. And I mean, people don't realize that your diet and your health really matter in the long scheme of things. Because if you're an artist, you need, I mean, ultimately, whatever your art form is, whether it is singing, whether it is painting, whether whatever it is, your creativity stems from your mind and you use your body as your apparatus to execute whatever you're thinking. So if your body isn't functioning optimally, your creative capacities also won't be at the optimal level. And as a result, your art form or whatever you're trying to create also won't be at the optimal level. So I just try to ensure that whatever little I can do to keep my health at whatever my best possible level can be.
That's great, bro. Yeah, I mean, not just for singing. It's basically your body needs to stay healthy and it doesn't matter what you're really doing.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so what are the instruments do you play?
So I used to play the keys, but now I'm a little rusty with that. Like every other Hindustani classical vocalist, I play the tanpura. I mean, not every Hindustani classical vocalist in the 21st century knows how to play a tanpura. That's a very sad thing which digitalization and technology has brought us, that now we have this dabba version, the shruti box, which people use. But the original tanpura, it's a string instrument. So I play that. Besides that, I also play the tabla. I'm a self-taught tabla player. I won't claim that I'm a very great tabla player, but I can play whatever is required to accompany a vocalist. Just the basics. And I also play the harmonium. And I won't say I'm good at it, but I've been fiddling around with the guitar for a few years now. So I kind of suck at that. Yeah, I do that too.
That's great. Who are your favorite artists?
Classical, non-classical.
Anything is fine. Like, I mean, you do classical. So maybe first classical and then in general.
Sure. So if I were to talk about classical, my God, so there are a lot of artists. It's very difficult to name just a few, but Pandit Bhimsen Joshi, Bharat Ratna Pandit Bhimsen Joshi is one of my favorites. I think he is the madman of India. Mad, not in the sense a mad person, but his music to invoke this sense of madness in you. Besides that, Ustad Amir Khan Saab, who is my guru's guru's guru. And he's one of the most influential figures in Hindustani classical music. Besides that, I am a big fan of Pandit Mallikarjun Mansoor, Ustad Bade Ghulam Ali Khan. I mean, there are so many names, I can't just name a few. But yeah, these are people from the older generation. These four, Bhimsen Joshi, Mallikarjun Mansoor, Ustad Amir Khan Saab and Bade Ghulam Ali Khan Saab. From a little later time, I think I'm very fond of artists like Pandit Ajay Chakravarti and Pandit Ulhas Kashalkar. These are people from the early 1950s. And also Pandit Venkatesh Kumar. If I were to talk about non-classical artists, I'll move into a little bit of the Western domain. When it comes to pop music, I really love Bruno Mars and Ariana Grande. I think they're phenomenal musicians. Besides that, I'm very much into metal, not death metal, mostly alternative metal. So I love bands like Bullet for My Valentine, Breaking Benjamin, Avenged Sevenfold. I mean, I think they have an amazing sound.
Really great, bro. So many different genres.
But there's one more artist I forgot to mention. I think this guy is very much in vogue right now. It's Jacob Collier. Have you heard of him?
Yeah, yes.
So Jacob Collier, like, he's a crazy dude. I mean, if you've been following, he's like, he sings on notes between notes. Like, he did this piece on C half sharp, which is like between C and C sharp. And he's able to hear these mid frequencies. I mean, And not just hear, he's able to hear these mid frequencies and then sing from them, making it as a bass. I mean, it's crazy.
Insane.
So, yeah, man, absolutely. Another thing which I really think people should be investing time in is books. So it's something which I've recently begun doing again, reading. So
we started a thing called the Decaf Show Book Club. Like during Mondays, we suggest books or music or, you know, K-dramas or series and stuff like that. Yeah, so what we do is we take a book and we don't start. I mean, we just started on the day when we talk about it and we ask the audience to start reading with us for a month.
Oh, wow.
And after the month finishes, we talk about the book and how it was, the story, the plot, stuff like that. Yeah, and yeah, it's really great. Even I just recently started after my friend suggested. And yeah.
Okay. I'd love to be a part of this too, man. I love reading.
Sure.
I mean, if it's just fiction, I probably finish a book in 2 days. But so there's this one thing, like I tend to read a lot more non-fiction than fiction for the simple reason that I enjoy reading fiction. So I will naturally read a lot of fiction if given the opportunity to or given that option. So I sort of force myself to read non-fiction because it takes more effort. But what I feel is that reading non-fiction, it actually helps you grow your mental faculties. So there's this book, I think you would have heard of it. It was like very famous last. I mean, it's been famous for a couple of years now. It's called Sapiens by Yuval Noah Harari.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a book which I would like urge everyone to read because it talks about so many different things on so many different levels. It talks about the evolution of humanity, the evolution of the human race, about forms of humans before the sapiens came. So there's Homo Deus, there's Homo Erectus, Neanderthals. It talks about how agriculture and the agricultural revolution changed the shape of humanity. It goes into all the nitty-gritties. So I think it's a great read. I think everyone should read this particular book.
Done. It's, then we'll add this to our Decaf Show book club.
Perfect, man. That would be amazing.
Amazing. Any other book which you love or which you just started and you find it very interesting?
I have this suggestion for people who are venturing into the area of classical music and they want something a little relatable to read, right? So there is this book by T.M. Krishna. So it talks about Carnatic music. It's called A Southern Music. It will sort of help you understand the classical way of thinking, right? The Indian classical bent of mind, what it exactly is. It sort of walks you through that. And this is for Carnatic music. If you're into Hindustani music, there are multiple books by an author called Deepak Raja. And there's also an author called Namita Devi Dayal. So they have written a lot of books on Hindustani music. You can pick up any one of their books and you'll sort of get a context. Because I think people, the reason why classical music isn't appreciated that much today is not because people don't, I mean, people aren't interested, but because people don't have a context for it, right? I mean, you see middle-aged people sitting in very odd postures and singing in a very, very funny way is how people interpret it. Because they don't have a context for it. But I think reading these books will sort of put things into perspective. It will, I mean, it'll kindle that interest towards it.
That's true. I mean, people do say it that way. They think it's funny or, you know, this is a weird position of setting and stuff like
that. So there was this, what happened in school was that I used to sing classical music. And for many years, people used to tell me, ki, bhai, ye kya aa karta rehta tu, bro? What is this aa? So I didn't really know what to say at first. But the most funny incident was one day, like a guy came and told me, like in my school, that bro, tu bhajan singer hai na? And I absolutely lost it because I was like, I've been singing classical music for the last 8 years, and you still think I'm a bhajan singer?
Oh no.
So, I mean, that's the level of awareness. But you can't really blame people because, I mean, I personally believe that the rise of pop culture was the death of our indigenous art forms. Because pop culture, it sells garbage basically. Why does this garbage sell? Because it's mindless. People basically have reduced attention span. I believe that the rise of pop culture caused the death of our indigenous art forms, because as a result, people have reduced attention spans now. They are willing to accept a product which doesn't, fall or rise up to the quality standards which should be in place. So I think people need to be made aware of, I mean, they should at least be given context of our indigenous forms of our cultural heritage. Once they have context, I feel naturally they will develop an appreciation. I feel like schools are highly responsible for this. Media, of course, is the most influential facet, I would say. The internet, Instagram, Facebook, all social media platforms, what we see over there is what people gravitate towards. So, I mean, if we can change the kind of content people are exposed to, their tastes and preferences will also change as a result of the same, is what I feel.
It's not just music, you know, it's basically just anything. You know, it could be
Absolutely.
dance. Like last year, Dalgona coffee suddenly got famous out of nowhere. And like every household started making it. And then I don't think we see a lot of Bharatanatyam dance these days. And it's just Western. It's not really, no, I don't think it's anyone's fault, but it's just how things pass and how easily people follow what others do.
Right. I think the fault, I mean, it doesn't, the burden doesn't rest on any one person, but I think it rests on the collective thought that whatever comes from the West is cool. I don't understand where this stems from, but I mean, it's clear as day is that even though people don't realize this consciously, at some level, we do give in to this that, whatever appears to be woke or appears to be happening in the West, what we think is cool in the West is what we try to gravitate towards. And
Exactly.
so I think we need to understand this phenomena. Once we have a clear-cut explanation for this, I think we'll be able to, I mean, at large, people will be able to implement the necessary changes in order to revive our own culture.
That's true, bro.